Welcome back, Las Vegas and Palm Springs. This is Megan Barth, ReaganBabe.com. 790 Talk Now, Talk That Rocks. So you can find me on Twitter, Reagan_baby, and on my Facebook page, ReaganBaby. And I'd love to hear from you, especially after this next guest, one of my favorites. I met Bill Whittle 9 years ago. He's a conservative blogger, political commentator, director, screenwriter, editor, pilot, and author. You can find him at BillWhittle.com, and that's Bill, WHITTLE.com. Bill, are you there?
Megan, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing just spectacular, thanks.
Well, you're welcome. Hey, I came across the videos that I believe that your PR agent, I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but she sent to me this morning, and you've got three now, but tell me, before we get into your three videos, it was on money, socialism, and capitalism. I thought they were brilliant.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you.
You're welcome. Where are you now? You're with, is it TPTurningPointUSA.com?
I'm not actually working for them,
okay.
They commissioned a set of videos. These are the first three in that series. And, you know, we go back a ways, Megan, and we spent the last 8 years, you know, basically firing shots over our shoulder as a rear guard action, trying to slow these, you know, these swine down as we try to make a retreat and get to high ground as fast as possible. So I'm sure you're feeling the same thing I am, which is pretty much every day I wake up and go, well, hold on now, all of my rights are not being eroded today. We actually have somebody who's like, the government's kind of protecting my rights, and it just takes a little while to get reoriented. But Charlie Kirk is a tremendous guy, and his organization, Turning Point USA, is really doing some good. They've got a conservative chapter on almost every university. And Charlie had seen some of my other videos and said, you should do some for Turning Point USA. And I said, okay. And he said, do you want to do them on, you know, free speech zones or safe spaces? And I said to Charlie, you know, I've been at a lot of universities, Charlie, and the reason that so many young people call themselves socialists is because they don't understand anything about economics at all, nothing. They think socialism is fair. They don't know what money is. They think capitalism's evil. So I decided to do a series of real simple building blocks. I kind of call them like rhetorical hand grenades. It's like, what is money? People know what it looks like, but very few people really understand what it is. And what is money? How does socialism work? Why is capitalism more moral, not just more efficient? Why is it a more moral system than socialism? And I'm real happy with the first three, and we're gonna. I think we got at least another 15 or so in the pipeline. So
now, did you gear? Yeah, no, I watched them. I have a couple questions about them. But did you gear those towards then the college audience? Right. So are you going to go kind of on? Doesn't Charlie also do campus reform?
He does, and I'm really aiming for colleges and high schools.
Good.
None of this stuff is terribly difficult to understand once you get down to the brass tacks. I mean, money essentially is liquid effort, right? It's the value that you spent during the last 2 weeks doing something for somebody, and it's given to you in a form of paper that you can exchange with somebody else's value. And once people understand that basically a paycheck is just sort of a easily tradable form of all the work that they did during the last 2 weeks, then all of a sudden the idea of somebody else spending that instead of you starts to feel a little more, disgusting. So these are the kind of things that we're doing, and these kind of arguments can be followed by elementary school kids. I suspect even progressives could probably follow something this simple. But
you might even flip some. I mean, the economics lesson. I loved your socialism video. I liked them all. But your socialism video, I thought, was really well done in that you compared it to a race. And can you kind of walk us through that one just a little bit?
Sure. When I was talking about, rhetorical hand grenades, we've got these great, very courageous conservative kids on campuses, high school and college campuses out there. And they say things like, I heard capitalism and socialism sucks, but the question is, somebody says, why does socialism suck? Well, when you hear progressives talking about equality, they act like they own the concept. We believe in equality, too, on the right. It's just that there are two different kinds of equality. Not many people think about this, and it's not sophistry. It's true. There are two different mutually exclusive kinds of societal equality. You can have equality of opportunity, which is capitalism, and that means that everybody, if you put 100 people down on a football field and started them on one end zone and told them to run to the other goal line, Equality of opportunity, which is what we believe in, means that everybody starts from the goal line. Nobody's held back artificially. No one gets to start from the 30. You don't get any special benefits. You don't get any special restraints. Everybody's equal under the law, so everybody starts at the same place and at the same time. And when the guy fires the gun and the race starts, what you're going to find is that of those 100 people, they're all going to run as fast as they can or as fast as they want to, and they will cross the line at different times. That means there will be different outcomes. The equality of opportunity means everybody starts the same, but people will go faster or slower depending on their talents. What progressives are interested in is a different kind of equality. It's called equality of result, and progressives want everybody to finish at the same line at the same time. They basically don't want anybody to, in life, have a bigger house or a higher salary or a nicer car, you know, within limits, obviously. But they want everybody to come out with more or less the same result, which means that everybody has to cross the finish line at the same time. And there are two problems with this. One of them is, if you think about it, you can only run as fast as you can run. So if you're going to make everybody cross the finish line at the same time, the whole race has to be run at the speed of the slowest runner. You can't run faster than you can run. And if that slowest runner is doing his best, then everybody has to run that slowly if they're going to cross at the same line. In other words, socialism pulls down all of the innovators, all of the hard workers, pulls down all of the people who are out there in front of things and developing new things that make everybody's life better, and it pulls them down to the level of the slowest runner because the reward's the same. And the second thing about that equality of result is, they talk about how fair socialism is, but if you got 100 people running a race and they start from the same place, everybody can run as fast or as slow as they want to. If everybody's going to finish at the same time, then you have to hold down 99 of those 100 people by force in order to make sure they don't get ahead of the slowest person in the race. It's coercion, and it's force, and it's cruelty, and it's not fair.
I love that. Now, take us through your capitalism video, because this one was cool too. And I like how, you know, and one thing I've always admired about you, Bill, and I've followed you for a long time, ever since you were with doing the Afterburners, was it Afterburners? And people, just so they know, if they're curious as to who you are, you have the Bill Whittle channel on YouTube, right?
Right, and everything's at BillWhittle.com.
BillWhittle.com, right. Mm-hmm. Your Afterburners are great. Some of my favorite. You're welcome. So take us through your capitalism one.
Capitalism, the best thing you can do, especially when you're trying to convert people, Megan, is to try and be funny about it, especially if you can laugh at yourself, gets people out of their trenches. And as I was saying, young people don't understand anything about economics. To be honest with you, people want to make economics so unbelievably complex that there's no way to understand it unless you have a PhD in economics, in which case you really don't understand it. But basically, what I did was, let's just imagine an economy that's very, very simple. Let's just go back to caveman days, and we won't worry about things like velocity and all M1 and M2. Let's just go back to when it's just very, very simple. If you have a tribe that's a hunter tribe up in the mountains, and they have to hunt because they can't farm up there, the sides are too steep. So if you've got a group of hunters, you're going to find that they're going to make terrific spears, really incredible spears, you know, straight and strong with a, you know, flint spearhead and carve magical runes on it for better hunting, but they don't do a lot of gathering, so their baskets look like birds' nests. Now, down in the valley, you've got a different tribe of people. They don't hunt very much at all. They grow their own food, so their spears are just kind of wobbly sticks. However, their baskets are woven nearly tight enough to hold water. So one day, the guy from the hunter tribe and one guy from the gatherer tribe meet in the Midlands, and they look at each other, and after a series of grunts and squeaks and threatening gestures, they decide to trade one really excellent spear for one top-notch basket. And then both the hunter and the gatherer go back home with what the other one has. Now, when that hunter comes back to his village, he's got a basket, the likes of which no one has ever seen before. He's the richest man in the village. He's got something that everybody wants, but nobody else has. He's wealthier than they are. And if this hunter is a progressive or a Democrat, he'll eventually loan the basket out to the rest of the tribe, and they'll hog it and abuse it and not take care of it, and murders will take place to see who owns the basket that week, and finally the basket will fall to pieces. But if he's a conservative, he's going to lie awake at night, this hunter, and say, you know what, I need to make 3 spears a week because that's what I lose and break, but I bet if I got up earlier and stayed up later, I could make another 2 spears a week. I definitely could. And if I make an extra 2 spears a week, then I can go down and trade them for an extra two baskets, and I can sell them to these people up here and get more shiny rocks.
Stay right there with the rocks.
Okay.
Okay? Because we're talk that rocks, and in order to keep the lights on, we got to take a break.
I understand how that works.
All righty. So, folks, that's Bill Whittle. We got to take a break, and we're going to learn about the hunters and the gatherers and the spears and the baskets right after we get back. It's a lesson in capitalism. You aren't going to want to miss it. Megan Barth, ReaganBabe.com. 790 Talk Now. Talk that rock. And welcome back. This is Megan Barth, ReaganBabe.com. 790 Talk Now, Talk That Rocks. You can find me on Twitter. You can always tweet me, Reagan_baby, on Facebook at ReaganBaby, or email me, ReaganBabyUSA@gmail.com. Would love to hear from you and your comments, and I'll pass them on to Bill Whittle, who we have online. Hi, Bill. Welcome back.
Hey, Megan. How are you?
Good. So we were talking about rocks, and basically the caveman or the farmer or the hunter up in the mountains, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's got more rocks because of the... Go ahead.
Sort of.
You're better at...
Basically what I was saying is if you have a tribe that does nothing but hunt, they make great spears and crummy baskets. If you have a tribe that does nothing but gather, they make great baskets and crummy spears. And if they trade for each one of these things... then the spear maker goes back to his town with a basket that no one's ever seen before, and the basket maker goes back to his village with a spear better than anyone's ever seen before. And the miracle of capitalism and trade is when two people trade what they have for what they want, who goes home richer?
Right, exactly.
Which one?
Both of them. Right.
Yes. So they both got wealthy, even though they just simply traded something. And the main reason capitalism is so successful is because if you go home richer after you've made a trade, the caveman who's going to be an entrepreneur says, I need to make three spears a week because that's what I break. That's what I need to make. But if I stay up late and get up early and do a lot of extra work, I can make extra spears that I can trade for extra baskets, and that means they'll give me more shiny pebbles. So basically the whole point of this is to say that trade makes both parties richer. It goes, more importantly, it incentivizes you to do more work than you would have to do otherwise. That's where all the actual wealth creation comes from. And the final point here is who loses in this transaction, right? Who loses? All of the people in the Hunter Valley get much better baskets than they would have had. All the people down in the Gatherer Valley get much better spears than they would have had. The more they trade, the lower the prices go on all of these things. And the only people that have a problem with this are these kind of bitter, lazy, stupid people who say, how come the guy who's doing all the trading's got all the shiny rocks or the seashells? Let's take some of his stuff by force. It's win-win-win all across the board, and it's what generates the world we have today.
That's right. Now, you also did something on money.
Mm-hmm.
And explain. So these are the first three, and tell us again who these are for. It's Charlie Kirk's group. Go ahead.
Yeah, they're for Turning Point USA. They're designed to be for high school, college kids. And by the way, these are the people we need to be talking to, Megan. We just kind of need to triage out everybody else and start creating a whole crop of conservatives who are going to be voting for the first time in 2020.
That's absolutely right. And I love, and by the way, I love how you've done them because it's not only tailored to, well, it is tailored to high school and college students, but I loved it.
Yeah,
but maybe I'm just that simple.
It's a whole new look, and it's got a lot of great video, a lot of images to explain it. In money, I was basically saying, what is money? And the dictionary just says that money is a medium of exchange. Okay. A medium of exchange of what? What are we exchanging when I give you money? Now, I used an example of somebody mowing a lawn, and in retrospect, I don't know if any kids today know what that actually is, but we'll just assume that they do. If I want somebody to mow my lawn, and somebody comes up and says, well, I'll mow your lawn, let's say it's $40. Well, why is it $40? Why is it that number? Why don't they charge me $400 to mow the lawn? Well, they could ask for $400 to mow the lawn, but that's not what a mowed lawn is worth. There are other people who will mow lawns for less than that. So if you charge $400, you're not going to get any customers. On the other hand, I want to pay as little as possible, so I could say, why don't you mow my lawn for $1? And they will say, no, it's not worth my effort to mow a lawn for $1. There are other people's lawns that I can mow for more than that. And so I want to keep the cost down. They want to keep the price high. And $40 is more or less where we're both pretty happy. So the question then becomes, who sets the price on how much it costs to mow a lawn? We both do. We both set a price on what we think is reasonable, and then we take it or not take it. But then I go on to make the point that, look, if you buy a pair of track shoes at Target, they cost about $30. If you want to buy a pair of Nike track shoes, they're about $250. So that means that you, meaning the you know high school kid, you have a choice now. Do you want to mow 1 yard and get the Target shoes, or do you want to mow 7 yards and get the Nikes? It's up to you. No one's telling you whether you do one or the other, and the price of the Nikes and the price of the Target shoes are set by you. You're the person who they're going to determine how much these things are worth. So you get to decide what you're going to do with the effort that you make in your life, and no one else. And once you realize that your paycheck is essentially a tradable form of the work that you've done for the past 2 weeks, the idea of somebody else taking that work and spending it on what they want to, and maybe giving you half if they're generous, doesn't seem like such a great idea anymore.
There you go. Yeah, you know, are you starting like a collegiate tour? How is this working?
I've been doing colleges for a while. It looks like I might be doing something a little bit more organized starting this year. While I like doing colleges and I learn a lot from doing colleges, it's one thing to go and talk to 100 people. You do videos like this, if they get the kind of promotion they need, you might be seen by millions of people. And I'm doing these, I don't want to sound obnoxious about this, but I'm doing these with the hope that they'll last for a while, you know? I mean, these are timeless concepts. It's not some theory of mine. I didn't paint this picture. I'm just a photographer. These basic things are how things work. And if you understand these things, you don't become a socialist anymore. And they're not socialists, by the way, Megan, because they don't behave like socialists. They say they're socialists, but they don't behave that way.
Right. Well, they haven't been in the real world yet. You know, right. You know, socialism is like a Bernie Sanders rock tour, right? Woodstock, you know, it was the anti-Trump rally, but he was drawing in millions and millions of people, right?
Yeah, he's drawing in millions and millions of young people who are real excited about Bernie. And the reason they're excited about Bernie is Bernie's saying you can have free health care and free college.
Mm-hmm.
But we all know that there's no such thing as free health care or free college. The colleges aren't going to work for free. They still have to have electricity, they have to pay their teachers, they have to pay the property. So that means that their free college is being paid for by somebody else. And the person who's paying for their free college is them, because they're borrowing the money against the future to give them free college today. They're going to be paying for that free college for the rest of their lives until they drop dead. Now, what you find about young people is they're all about wealth redistribution so long as it's somebody else's wealth being redistributed to them. But when they have to redistribute some of their wealth to other people, all of a sudden they're all William F. Buckley. They're rock rib conservatives. Because if you ask one of these young Bernie socialists to take their cell phone or their toy, you know, their Xbox or their PlayStation, their toy, and say, hey, man, you know, if you believe in wealth redistribution from each according to his ability to each according to his need, you've got a toy that costs $400, and you could feed an actual family of people in Africa for a year on that money. Why don't you take your toy down to the pawn shop, sell it, and hand the money out to homeless people in America? Why don't you redistribute some of your wealth? And they'll look at you like you're from Mars. They'll say, but this is my phone.
Right.
And then I get to say, that's right. It is your phone. Technically, it's your dad's phone, but let's not split hairs here. So you catch them in their own behaviors, right? You make them realize that they are behaving like capitalists, even though they want the big social virtue of saying, oh, I'm all about sharing. No, you're all about sharing other people's money to you, but when it comes time for you to share some of your money, all of a sudden you're not so socialist after all.
That's absolutely perfect. That's why I love you, Bill Whittle.
Thank you, darling. I miss seeing you. It's good to see you.
It was great to see you.
You were the person who was, I met you at CPAC, and you were, I think I got that wrong. I saw it at CPAC last year. Was it pig balloons you were looking for?
That was 9 years ago when we had our first tea party on Lafayette Square, and I ordered pig balloons online and had them delivered to the hotel. And
Because
of pork. And I wanted something to represent pork. And so I ordered pig balloons. I think I ordered 50 of them. And when they arrived, I had a florist blow them up with helium. And then all of a sudden I had 50 pig balloons, but they took up a mass of about nearly a football field. And so we're like, how the hell are we going to get these to Lafayette Square? Well, thankfully, Andrew Langer with the Institute of Liberty had a convertible. So we had DeRoy Murdoch, Andrew Langer, and Peter Roth of U.S. World News Report driving in the middle of the district with these pig balloons hanging out of a Sebring convertible.
Well, you know, We just got back from CPAC, both of us, but that first CPAC was different. It was a lot more depressing. It was a lot more exciting. Nobody knew what was going on. We were all doing this for the first time.
Yeah.
I see this blonde woman who's 6'11" or whatever you are, and she's got these pig balloons. And I said, "What are these?" She said, "It's to protest pork." And I said, "You must live here in D.C." He said, "No, I'm here from Orange County." You just got here in Washington. You've never been in this town before, and you found pig balloons, for God's sake?
I'm resourceful.
Person.
That's right. That's right. Don't come between me and a balloon, right?
No, ma'am.
Well, tell people where they can find you.
Everything I do now is at BillWhittle.com, and we do work that's membership-based, so if you've seen the work and you like the message, we sure would love to have you on board, because we're going to – this is, I think, the best money you can spend if you really want to save this country. We're just expert political messaging going to young people, and God knows how many millions of dollars people have given to, you know, RNC candidates and stuff like that. And we're trying to make a real difference with the people that are going to be voting in the future.
Well, I believe in you, and I believe in our audience, too. So it's BillWhittle.com. Throw some stuff in the kitty. Let's help him change the youth in this country and create more William F. Buckleys. That's exactly what we need. Bill, love you. I'll talk to you soon.
Great to see you, Megan.
Yeah, thank
you. Take care now.
You too. Megan Barth, ReaganBabe.com. After this break, guess who I got? I got Larry Klayman. You're not going to want to go anywhere. This guy has nearly sued the pantsuit off Hillary Clinton. 790 Talk Now, Talk That Rocks. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Megan Barth, ReaganBabe.com. 790 Talk Now, Talk That Rocks. 98.1 FM in Palm Springs. And I'm just so delighted for my next guest, Larry Klayman. He is the founder of Judicial Watch. Thank God for that. And Freedom Watch. He's known for his strong public interest advocacy in furtherance of ethics in government. How nice, right? And individual freedoms and liberties. During his tenure at Judicial Watch, he obtained a court ruling that Bill Clinton committed a crime, the first lawyer ever to have done so against an American president. Larry became so famous for fighting corruption in the government and the legal profession that the NBC hit drama series West Wing created a character after him, Harry Claypool, of Freedom Watch. His character was played by actor John Deal. He speaks four languages. He's the author of two books, Fatal Neglect and Whores, Why and How I Came to Fight the Establishment. Larry has a third book in the works dealing with the breakdown of our political and legal system. His current book, Whores, is now on sale at WND.com, Amazon.com, BarnesandNobles.com, Borders, and all major stores and booksellers. Larry, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Megan. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I was so pleased to meet you. First, we talked in the Southwest baggage handling line, and you had actually interviewed with Ricochet right before I got to the Ricochet interview, and then we finally had a chance to exchange business cards at the restaurant in Baltimore Airport, and I thought, wow, you know, and I had heard your name, obviously, and then I went and did a little digging on who you were, and I have to say, congratulations, sir, and God love you for getting some charges levied against the Clinton family, or Bill Clinton.
Well, thank you. It's been very hectic, as you know. There was CPAC, and there's everything else that's going on right now. And, of course, you can see what's happening with Attorney General Jeff Sessions. We have the left trying to destroy the Trump presidency, and we're doing our part. We're nonpartisan, but we want to give him a chance to succeed. So we've been very busy running around. There's a new crisis every single day, and we're trying to address it.
And by design. I mean, that is out of the Saul Alinsky Democrat playbook, by where, you know, if there's not a crisis, create one in order to distract and undermine, isolate and polarize the enemy. And they're trying their best to do that with Trump, aren't they?
Well, they are, you know, and one of the things that I even had a personal experience myself in the baggage claim of Southwest and LAX, because you remember a few weeks ago when the immigration order came out, the initial one that the Ninth Circuit invalidated, there were these violent protests.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the baggage claim coming back from a particular place, and I was basically assaulted by a Muslim woman who charged at a group of us standing there. We thought we were under terrorist attack, particularly after what happened in Fort Lauderdale baggage claim just 2 weeks earlier when certain people were killed by this convert to ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really out of control. I mean, the country's being deconstructed. The left wants to take the country down and hopefully put it back in its own image. We've got Barack Obama running, in effect, a war room out of his new mansion, Kalorama. You've got Eric Holder involved. You've got the ACLU, believe it or not, Megan, who raised $24 million the weekend of those violent protests. It's a racketeering enterprise, in addition to trying to destroy the country. They're making money off of it. You got George Soros, who's financing all of this. And whether it's Jeff Sessions today or violent protests a few weeks ago, and we'll probably see some more with the new immigration order coming out tomorrow or Monday, the country is basically going up in flames by these leftists, and we can't allow that to happen.
Well, right, and they want that to happen. But so how does Trump protect his cabinet from further political assassination and the actions of the left? I mean, I know he has to, you know, his successes, of course, are going to be his best defense and offense. But from a legal strategy, what can he do to somehow, I would say, cut the legs off of the violent left?
Well, he just has to stay the course. And, you know, public relations plays a role. But we at Freedom Watch, we're in effect the law firm that's trying to keep the left off of everyone's back right now. Now, we're not partisan. I've taken actions against Republicans and others, even though I am a Republican. I sued George W. Bush a few times for warrantless wiretaps and stuff like that. So we do what we think is right. But right now, this president needs a chance to succeed. So we're taking the strong action. We're doing the heavy lifting. We're doing what, for political reasons, the Trump presidency and his Justice Department can't do. And, of course, they're trying to neuter Jeff Sessions today, claiming he had improper contacts with the Russians, which, you know, I sincerely doubt. But Charles Schumer and, you know, the band of criminals in the Senate, Schumer taking over from the hated Harry Reid, which comes from your part of the world.
Yeah.
And we remember what Harry, Dirty Harry does. It's simply out of control. And we have a leftist media strike force taking on the leftist media for their false news. We have a judicial selection strike force to get better judges. We have 100 vacancies in our courts, and we can fill them with good judges who obey the law.
Good.
And we have our lawsuits against Hillary Clinton and Obama. I just filed one today against the ACLU, Obama, Soros, Boulder, and a host of others for this incitement to violence. And we're doing what we can because it's a big fight. You know, the ACLU raised $24 million, as I said, on those violent protests. It's a racketeering enterprise. And, you know, we need the support, I can do a little bit of a commercial here, to fight them. Yeah, so people can go to freedomwatchusa.org if they want to support us, because we're the only ones really fighting back with teeth in terms of bringing hard-hitting lawsuits that perhaps will put them back on their heels.
Well, exactly. And it's one of the things that the Democrats promised. I think even Chuck Schumer was on the dais stating that they are going to use the courts against this administration every chance they get. And
they have a good chance of succeeding, because 70 to 80% of the judges now in the lower federal courts are either Clinton or Obama appointees. They're leftists. They don't really believe that law needs to be followed. They just rule according to their own political agendas, generally speaking. And what we need are good judges here who, whether you're conservative, liberal, middle of the road, just obey the law.
Right.
And we don't have that right now.
Yeah, uphold the law instead of interpret
the law.
Yeah, uphold the law instead of interpret the law like the Ninth Circuit did. And you're in California, correct? So you're in another crazy state. Like, mine was taken over by Marxists in November. Yours is completely taken over by Chicano Marxists.
Well, I'm in every place. I'm in Washington, D.C. Half the time I'm in California. I'm in Florida. You know, I travel about. I'm kind of a little bit like Yasser Arafat. I never spend two nights in the same place, you know.
Right.
But I'm being facetious, obviously. This is what I do for a living. That's what I continue to do for a living. My former group, Judicial Watch, you know, they do a pretty good job with FOIA requests, but they really don't have the experience and the lawyers to take on these really big cases. We enjoined the NSA two times in the last 2 years, and now we find out the NSA is still, you know, illegally wiretapping people like General Mike Flynn. They're probably wiretapping the president. So we're going back to court on that. So we're doing what we can. We are the antidote. We're the flip side of the coin to the ACLU. And we need everybody's support to really stand up to it. We need to hire more people. We need to have more resource, because we're up against a big fight here.
Absolutely. And say your website one more time and where people can donate, because we definitely need your interference on behalf of the administration and on behalf of our freedoms and liberties.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, Megan. It's a Freedom Watch USA, one word, freedomwatchusa.org. and you can see what we're doing there. And I hope that, you know, I can come back another time for much longer. It's just been really crazy these last few days. I just got back to the office.
I'll have you on for two segments next time. How's that?
I look forward to it.
All right,
Thank
Larry.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for, you know, doing the work, doing God's work. Appreciate it.
And you're doing great work too, Megan. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
God bless.
God bless Bye-bye. You. Thank you. Folks, that was Larry Klayman. You can go to freedomwatchus.org, right? Yeah. Freedomwatch.org, I think it was. Help his organization out. We need to fight off these leftists as best as we can, and we need to use the rule of law to do it with a talented lawyer like Larry and his team at Freedom Watch. This is Megan Barth, ReaganBabe.com. We only got one segment left. We're going to close it strong. This is 790 Talk Now. Talk That Rocks. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Megan Barth, ReaganBabe.com, 790 Talk Now, Talk That Rocks. FreedomWatchUSA.org is the website I want you to go to. And if you have a couple bucks, throw it Larry Klayman's way. He's taking on the radical left legally and trying to stop them in their tracks as they continue to sabotage and attack from all angles this administration. They're picking off Trump's team one by one until they get to the real prize, which is Trump himself. And they're not going to stop. They're only going to get louder. They're only going to get more violent. And the only person that can really slow them down and perhaps even stop them, I mean, Larry Klayman, just so you know, and he didn't expound on this, but he is one of the only lawyers in the country to get an injunction against the NSA. I mean, that's how he can roll. And so if he needs a little gas in his chassis, you can do so by going to and give him some gas in his chassis. It's freedomwatchusa.org. So I wanted to end the show on a story that came across my Facebook feed from an old grade school friend of mine named Brian. And sometimes he's a truck driver and sometimes he's listening. So if you are, give me a toot on your horn as you're going down the great highway across this great country. So the headline caught my eye, and the picture even caught my eye as well. So you know the old adage about crazy redheads? This one is textbook. Like, if you looked up crazy redhead, her picture would be there. And it's the title is, it was posted yesterday on, where is this? I don't know where this is from. Vegan admits to crashing into chicken truck on purpose. Now, I'm a carnivore. I absolutely love to eat steak and chicken and fish, and I got no problem with vegans. I don't even know what a vegan is. Okay, but you know this chick is a crazed liberal. You know it. You just know it. You can know it by looking at her, and you know after I read this story that liberalism truly is a mental disorder. Georgia police say they have arrested a woman who intentionally crashed into a chicken truck and then fled the scene. The incident happened on February 21st on Highway 72 in Hull. The chicken truck driver told police that he was hit by a red car. When he slowed down, the car hit his rig again, this time spinning out on the highway after the impact. The car fled the scene, but police found a license plate on the ground in the debris from the crash. The license plate led Madison County Sheriff's deputies to the home of 26-year-old Judith M. Armstrong. Armstrong admitted to police that she hit the truck deliberately, explaining that she was a vegan and hit the truck due to it being a chicken truck. She also said she fled the scene because she was afraid she could lose her license. Hello, if you flee the scene of the accident, you are losing your license. Inadvertently and as consequentially, rather, Armstrong was arrested and charged with DUI. So obviously you can drink and be a vegan and drink a lot. Maybe she should actually pick up some chicken. Hit and run, aggressive driving, and obstruction. And that is more from the insanity of the insane left. And we're going to get a little crazy tomorrow, too. And tomorrow we also have some great guests. Jim Marchant, actually, from the 38th Assembly District here in Nevada, wanted to call in and give us an update on the Capitol and what's going on there. He's introducing an open carry, and I think it might have been heard. So he's going to be calling in tomorrow And then we've got a whole bunch of other great guests for you. So make sure you tune in again at 3 o'clock because I'll have this mic from 3 to 6. I'm sorry, I couldn't take really any calls today. If you have a quick comment, you can call now at 844-WAR-NOW-1, 844-WAR-NOW-1. And I've got about 30 seconds to take your call if you had something to say. But from the whole host of guests, we had Bill Whittle. And Bill Whittle, I got to tell you, I'm going to give him a plug again, BillWhittle.com. What he's doing with Charlie Kirk's group on campusreform.org, as well as, Turning Point USA. We need, as conservatives, someone like Bill that puts forth a message that is simple, concise, clear, and convincing. And this message needs to be shared and spread onto our grade schools, high schools, and college campuses. Because these kids, as you know, are being taught to basically hate this country, that we're a bunch of imperialists, that socialism is good. And that's why you saw this huge uprising behind Bernie Sanders, because, you know, most of these kids are being taught that everything's free and everyone gets a trophy, when as a matter of fact, that's not real life. So BillWhittle.com is another great resource, and you can share those videos even with your own kids. I mean, I watched all three of them today. I was done in like maybe, I don't know, 12 minutes. They're not too long. And it was just thoroughly entertaining. I don't consider myself an economic genius, but I learned some from him because of, like I said, the succinctness and the simplicity by which he can translate capitalism, economics, money, socialism, and the conservative message. So I just thought that those two guests, as well as, who did I have at the top of the hour, Charlie? See, it's 3 hours and I've already lost my mind and blown. Herb London. How can I forget Dr. Herb London of the School of Economics? Another great guest. So we're going to have just a lineup like that of guests for you tomorrow. So make sure you tune back in to 790 Talk Now, Talk That Rocks, or out in Palm Springs. Thanks for listening, California. 98.1 FM. This is Megan Barth, ReaganBabe.com, and I'll be back with y'all tomorrow afternoon. Thanks so much.